Radio 1.
The Business on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Electric Ireland. Our business is understanding yours.
Good morning. Coming up, the reality for Wall Street's new recruits, the age-old question of age, and the ticking tax time bomb. You can contact us by text to 51551, by phone to 1857 15150, email thebusiness@rte.ie, or tweet to @thebusinessRTE. But first, this morning, the Irish woman at the very top of the European Civil Service. Dubliner Catherine Day is Secretary General of the European Commission. She came home yesterday to speak at a conference on what's next for post-Troika Ireland that took place at the Aviva Stadium. We caught up with her this morning. I first asked her how the upcoming European elections will change things.
Well, I think the biggest challenge facing all of those who will come to these new jobs later in the year will be to tackle the challenge of unemployment. I think we have made great progress in getting public finances back under control, and that's an essential for any kind of lasting growth for the future. But we have unacceptably high levels of young people unemployed, but also those who are long-term unemployed are finding it very difficult to get back into the labour market. And as you know, we have been investing in a youth guarantee to try to make sure that all young people are either in education, training or employment between the ages of 16 and 24. And I think tackling unemployment and tackling the issue of fairness in our society are going to be two things that will be very high on the agenda of the new leadership.
A lot of that tackling is going to cost money. Where will it come from?
Well, I think it's not only a question of more money, it's also a question of rethinking policies. It's very interesting if you look across different European countries, for the same amount of spending, get more efficient results than others. So, yes, it's about spending money, of course, but it's about spending it differently. And that's why the European Commission now is putting a big emphasis on what we call the quality of public spending and not only the quantity of public spending.
And in doing that, of course, the quality and the quantity, it isn't like the European Commission making recommendations in the past. There's more teeth to it now.
Yes, that's true. One of the lessons that we have learned from the crisis was that we do not sufficiently coordinate our policy decisions together. And you can have negative consequences in one country of decisions made in another, or you can have positive effects. So we need to take more decisions together. We have put in place a whole system of monitoring so that we can see problems coming at a much earlier stage. And then also the teeth that you refer to, or the corrective mechanisms that if member states do not take the steps that they need to take to keep their economies in good shape, the rest of the Eurozone will not suffer as a consequence. But if ever bad practices persist, then yes, the Commission even has the power to fine countries in future if they don't stick to the rules that they have all agreed between themselves.
Is there an extent to which Europe is taking the running of economic policy out of the hands of local governments?
No, definitely not, because this is very much done on the basis of a partnership. The Commission makes recommendations, but they have to be then adopted by ministers. So it's always the nationally elected representatives who take the decisions.
But if they don't take the decision, there would be a fine.
But they have agreed to that. They have voluntarily bound themselves, and it's in their collective interest. We have seen with a relatively small economy the size of Greece that it can take the whole Eurozone to the brink of disaster. We don't want that to happen again. And we all benefit a lot from being in the European Union, being in the Euro. There are responsibilities that come with those benefits as well, and one of the responsibilities is to stick by the agreed rules.
You made a very interesting point in your speech. You made the point that people underestimated the extent to which European politicians would stand by the euro, their political determination to make sure that it survived, and that the reason for that and the thing that you learned is that the euro and the euro area was basically still under construction. And I'm wondering, in terms of it being under construction, if a person was running a construction site, you got health and safety recommendations. If people get hurt, you're responsible. There were problems and there were holes and there were gaps in relation to the way the euro was operated, and people did get hurt. Is the European Union responsible for that?
I think that there is a shared responsibility for what happened. I think that when the euro was launched, we went as far as the political will of the member states would allow it to go. But with hindsight, one can see that we didn't have all the instruments that we needed, especially for when there would be a crisis. So we have now built up those instruments. We have a 500 billion euro facility. We also learned that we did not take each other's policies enough into account. We didn't understand just how close our economies are linked together. That's why we have put much stronger monitoring systems in place now. So these are the lessons that we have learned from the crisis. So I don't think this is a question of apportioning blame. It's a question of we collectively did not respect the rules of sound public finances, sound personal finances. And we have very painfully over the last 5 years put the system in place that should prevent those problems happening again. We are bound together permanently. We have a common future. What happens in one country matters in another. So I think that although it has been very tough in the programme countries, and I think there's great understanding for and respect and admiration for the sacrifices that have been made, but it has been done together. No country has been left alone. No country has been isolated like what happened in Argentina or in Iceland. There has been that collective rallying round. But of course, those who are lending the money want to make sure that the problems will be put right and that we won't be facing this situation in the future.
See, one of the reasons why I asked you that question is because I have no doubt, and as you describe, so many countries have stood by others and there has been an extent of solidarity, particularly in relation to the macroeconomics of everything, because we're all tied in. If one country goes down like Greece, everybody goes down. But for ordinary people who don't think about macro policy and they don't think about fiscal policy, and they have been maimed probably for life by accidents which happened on the construction side of the euro. And they hear governments and they see words about solidarity between governments and so on, and such a country lent money to Ireland and so on, but they see none of it. And their lives have been destroyed by debt, by lost businesses, by lost everything in relation to where they are at the moment. And they're wondering, you know, should there not be some compensation somewhere in the system or something, not necessarily monetary, but for their situation, for people who got hurt, not just countries who are putting things right, but for the people who are left behind. Younger people, newer people will come along with a better managed, better run Europe, a better single currency, but older people are hurt and will not get over it.
Well, of course, I cannot deny that individuals have been hurt, and it's true that not everybody will be able to make up the gap that has opened up in the crisis. But it's important that we fix it for the future. We can't go back in time. We have been trying at European level and at national level to find ways to help people get over the difficulty. I talked about the youth guarantees, about the extra funding that there is to try to get young people trained for the jobs that are there, to increase people's skills, etc. And we are also trying to make sure that the kind of growth that is now coming back to Europe will be lasting next time round, because otherwise growth that is going to collapse in the future, that's built on unrealistic expectations, will damage people all over again. So I think all we can do now is fix what has happened and try to create opportunities for the future, recognizing that not everybody the benefits will not reach everybody. But that's why we also, as part of our growth strategy, put an emphasis on tackling poverty. And we are trying to lift 20 million people out of poverty. That's our target. Now, it has been knocked off course by the crisis, but that's not to take away from the fact that we need to have that kind of target to remind our society that there are people who risk getting left behind and that employment isn't the answer for everybody. So we are trying at European level. We have policies for the most disadvantaged. We have policies for inclusion. All of these things that I can only talk about at a general level, but that do reach down to the individual and that do show, I think, that most Europeans care about living in a decent society. They don't want to see people marginalised or left behind. Now the question is how to shape the policies to reach those people and to give them the support that they need for the future.
I wonder, because people have often said this to me, are we all Germans now?
No, I don't think so. What I find after so many years of working in Brussels is maybe our national identity is only more strongly defined when we are outside of our national system. So I never felt particularly Irish in Ireland, but I feel very strongly Irish when I'm in Brussels. And I think that the things that make us different are really a source of great richness in Europe. And nobody wants to have a kind of bland homogenization. So we want to take the best of what it means to be Irish, to be German, to be French, etc. But I think taking the best also means where other countries are getting it more right than we are, to take that on board, but to make it our own. And that's why in European policymaking, we put a very strong emphasis on what we call country specific. We don't have a blueprint that we want to roll out for every country. We have a certain framework within which every country should work, but they must do it in their way.
One of the big issues that people are worried about at the moment is Ukraine and the situation there with regard to Europe and the European Union. It looks like a very worrying situation which could deteriorate. What's your view on that?
Well, we are very worried about the situation. First of all, it's completely unacceptable. It is legally not correct, and it is politically unacceptable just to annex part of another country. Who would have thought in 21st century Europe that this could still happen? So that's why you're seeing a very strong and united response from all of the leaders of the European countries, and also at the G7 meeting, which took place earlier in the week in the Netherlands. We have responded, making very clear that if there is any further destabilization of Ukraine, there will be a response, that it is not acceptable to the European Union that Russia would behave in this way. We hope that the message will be heard and that channels for dialogue can be opened up and that the situation will not deteriorate. But we are looking at what kind of measures we would take if necessary. So there's a lot of concern, a lot of work and a lot of thinking going on, but we will be able to confront this in a united way.
Catherine, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.